Thanks for tuning in. It's about 7 past the hour. This is election day in several states, so as results come in that might be pertinent to our conversations here, we will share those with you. You know, interesting thing I heard today, during the Obama administration, the banking industry, the very guts of capitalism, the very scrotum of capitalism. The banking industry has made as much profit on their criminal activities in 2.5 years of Obama as they made during the entire 8 years of the Bush crime family. And the dumbass Republicans, especially Bachman, keep spinning around the country referring to Obama as a socialist. You know, that's the thing about these Republicans. There are no facts that you can present to them. It doesn't make any difference if it's a birth certificate or numbers from Wall Street or scientists speaking out about global warming. There is no set of facts that can be presented to Republicans, either office holders or the voters, that registers. That's not how they operate. Republicans do not operate on a fact or in a fact-based consciousness. They operate somewhere else. I'm not sure where it is, but dear God. How about that Herman Cain today, huh? God. I've got to pay a little attention to that a little bit later here. The big news on the global stage from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN Atomic Agency, has released a very detailed report to certain member states that points out the military dimensions of Tehran's nuclear program. The release of this document, there's been an awful lot of media activity, media speculation in the weeks and months leading up to this report about military strikes against Iranian nuclear sites. And this document now details new evidence suggesting efforts to develop a nuclear arms capability. The United States and Israel have together committed all sorts of acts of international criminal acts. We have sent people in, or the Israelis have, you'll never know, we'll never know, to assassinate their nuclear scientists, two of whom were gunned down. The U.S. and or Israel developed a Stuxnet computer virus that got into Iran's nuclear capabilities, the capabilities to develop this specialized equipment needed and destroyed everything. Now, you can make an argument either way, whether it's good or bad. I think it's a bit hypocritical, though, don't you, that two heavily armed nuclear nation states, United States and Israel, are saying no to somebody who wants to join the suicide club. You know, any country that has nuclear weapons declares itself a member of the suicide club, period. Because there's no such thing as using nuclear weapons to any degree or level other than global suicide. Now, I know my economic affairs advisor, Prairie 2, disagrees with that a little bit. He says that, no, there are tactical nukes now. And, of course, Prairie 2 is right from an engineering or a physics standpoint. Those types and low-yield nuclear weapons do exist. But I think it's a given that once a nuclear exchange begins, it doesn't make any difference who it's between. It can be between India and Pakistan, which is one of the places it just may start. It can be a nuclear attack, although I don't think the Israelis would be that stupid. It would be some sort of the bunker buster bomb attack from Israel. One guesses. But no matter who sets off that first nuke, it's my contention that it's kind of like throwing a rock in the middle of a very still pond. You know, the ripples that come out from where the rock went in work all the way across the pond. And I'm afraid that that's exactly what would happen. So here we sit at DEFCON, what? I don't know. I wonder where the nuclear scientists, they have the not the atomic clock, but what is it? I think it's been sitting at 5 or 6 minutes to midnight, and with the news of this tonight or today, I'm sure that that clock is inching closer to midnight. So anyway, the report was distributed to the 35 members of the IAEA and to the United Nations Security Council. And parts of this report were obtained by various global news agencies. The IAEA said in the report, quote, the agency, that's the IAEA, has serious concerns regarding possible military dimensions to Iran's nuclear program, end quote. The agency cited what they called credible information, that the data indicate that Iran has carried out activities relevant to the development of a nuclear explosive device. And the report also said that Iran has benefited from the help of, quote, a clandestine nuclear network, end quote, corresponding to news that a Russian scientist and a Pakistani expert or experts have lent their nuclear expertise to Iran. Now, the Iranians, of course, quickly rejected the report. You talk about weasel words. The ambassador, Iran's ambassador to the IAEA, said the report is unbalanced, unprofessional, and politically motivated. Oh, really? And Iran's official news agency, IRNA, stated that the findings of this report, quote, repeat the Zionist regime's claims, end quote, adding that the document, which was supposed to remain confidential, quote, was given ahead of time to media outlets and American government officials. And that goes on. You're listening to these weasel words, right? So far, all these words, Iran has not confirmed nor denied the existence of a nuclear weapons program. I don't know why I'm laughing. You know, this could be the end of everything. But anyway, the statement from the official Iran news agency went on to say, quote, publishing satellite images of suspicious facilities as damning evidence proves that this report was conducted without proper evidence in order to fit to the American worldview. End quote. The U.S. State Department today said it needed time to study the report. And interestingly, the United States is not threatening further sanctions against Iran, but not its oil and gas sector or its central bank. Now, the capitalists don't want that to happen. You know, they may be dragged kicking and screaming, the capitalists, into a nuclear or conventional confrontation. At this point, I guess it would be a conventional confrontation with Iran. And, of course, it's always disaster capitalism to go in and mop up afterwards where the 1% continues to gut and disembowel the rest of the planet while they scoop up all the assets and money they possibly can. But, at this point, going after the gas and oil sector or the central bank is not really on the table. You know, they don't want to disturb that. Now, once Iran falls like Libya, then there has to be some infrastructure left in place for the American and British and Russian, I guess, oil companies to move in and, you know, take care of business. Too shocking to see.
Won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight, and I haven't got a lot of time.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I'll get to it later. 21 past the hour. All right, what I was trying to think of, thanks to Prairie 2, the Doomsday Clock. Doomsday Clock. It's been maintained since 1947 by the board of directors of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, the University of Chicago, where the first nuclear bomb was developed. You can either see that as fitting or ironic, one of the two. Anyway, as you know, the closer the clock is to midnight, the closer the world is estimated to be to global disaster. And as of about a year ago, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, the doomsday clock now stands at 6 minutes to midnight. The just for future reference, since its creation, the time on the clock has changed 19 times. Now, originally, this clock, this analogy, represented the threat of a global nuclear war. But for the past 6 years, it has also reflected climate-changing technologies and, quote, new developments in the life sciences and nanotechnology that could inflict irrevocable harm, end quote. Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. Oh, and it's Prairie 2, or I'm sorry, as Michael in Roswell adds, it's worth mentioning that virtually every war game done by the U.S. that begins with tactical nukes used against another nuclear power, each of these games has resulted in full-scale nuclear war within days to, at most, weeks. And the purpose of war games, of course, is to test possible outcomes. And, you know, what to expect. Who's going to attack whom? With how much resulting damage? How long will the a nuclear war last? Blah, blah, blah. If you remember, when was it, back in the 80s, the movie War Games. Remember that? Whew, that was a scary-ass movie. But in that's partial. I think Michael's response here is in partial indirect rebuttal to what Bruce Enberg has said in writing to the program here at Prairie 2, that tactical nukes, and I don't know, maybe Bruce didn't say this, but I got the impression that he was inferring that tactical nukes could be used without triggering global nuclear exchange of some sort. So there you have it. Arguments. Differing points of view between two members of our research team. okay, what else? I have a press release here from Occupy Washington and the No Fear Coalition. Protesters, it says, from a wide range of organizations led by the Occupy Washington, D.C. organization, the No Fear Coalition, National Whistleblower Center, and several more will gather on Thursday, November 10th, that would be day after tomorrow, at noon, to demonstrate against the Environmental Protection Agency. The demonstration will gather from 12 noon at Freedom Plaza. That's where the October 2011.org demonstration began. They'll gather there before proceeding to the Environmental Protection Agency to lay wreaths at EPA's door, symbolizing the illness and deaths from asthma and other upper respiratory diseases that will occur as a result of the Obama administration's decision to delay smog regulations. You remember hearing about that about a month or so ago. We talked about it. Let me see what else here it says. Blah, 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 blah. Talks about what the EPA has tried to do this year and what it has not tried to do. The Obama administration, you remember, overrode recommendations of its own EPA scientists about emission standards, emission controls, I should say. So we haven't played, you know, the Obama administration, if you get right down to it, is not that different at all from the Bush administration, where it concerns the exploration for or burning of or of fossil fuels, whether it's coal, oil, tar sands oil, just on and on. So starting at noon, day after tomorrow, Freedom Plaza, Washington, D.C., and a march to the EPA. I guess kind of like the anti-pipeline demonstration on Sunday around the White House where thousands of people gathered. You did hear about that, right?
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, good news from Ohio tonight. Voters there overturned an anti-union law, which was a kick right into the private parts of Republican Governor John Kasich, and definitely a victory to labor unions across the country. It was issue two, a ballot referendum on a measure that Kasich had ordered that restricted collective bargaining rights for more than 360,000 public employees, among other provisions. According to Huffington Post, opposition to the legislation inspired large protests from residents around the state this past year. A statement by Becky Williams, president of the Service Employees International Union, District 1199, said, quote, "Even after John Kasich locked the doors to democracy and shut out everyday heroes from the statehouse, in the cold blister of February, Working people never lost hope. We marched in the spring. We circulated petitions in the summer. And now this fall, we delivered a win for all working people by defeating Issue 2 and repealing Senate Bill 5. Kasich, who is a real piece of work, I don't know many governors. I don't know any governors. But I had experience with Kasich on the one and only time I was on Fox News channel, Rupert Murdoch's anti-American terror network. And I can tell you, he is just a real scumbum. Kasich is right down there at the bottom of the heap. He signed it into law, SB 5, into law on March 31st. And the law was put on hold by a court, I think, by a judge during this referendum campaign. Now, there's a caveat here. The defeat may have nullified SB 5, but according to Huffington Post, parts of the law may not be dead in the long term. While much of the public attention has centered on the law's ban on collective bargaining for public employees, the law also contained provisions to require public employees to contribute to their health care and pension benefits, along with pushing merit pay for teachers, proposals that polled well in the run-up to the election. So Mike Foley, who's a Democrat, said the Republican Ohio State Representative, Democrat Mike Foley, said the Republican leadership in the legislature may try to pass those proposals one by one when they reconvene in January. But it was all, the whole thing was defeated. So Kasich's spokesman recently said that the governor had not been focusing on what ifs in case the referendum was defeated. Well, you can now, John. Now you can focus on a what if. Or rather, now it's a it is, right? Wow. So anyway, good news for working Americans. And I think part of this has to be part of this defeat. And I understand, I haven't got all the details yet, but there are a couple of other bills or referenda on state ballots across the country that have been anti-worker or anti-voter and are in danger of being defeated. I say danger from the standpoint of the right-wingers who put them into play. So to whatever degree these anti-middle-class, anti-worker, anti-union bills, referenda are I should say bills that are defeated by these various referenda, I think part of those victories belong to the consciousness raising that has occurred as a result of the occupation movement. There's no question. And in Maine, by about a 60-40 margin, 60% to 40%, the voters there are reinstating same-day voter registration that they had for years until this Republican governor ended it. So, and, you know, that is a voter registration rule that eliminates so many voters who normally would vote Democratic. Those would be workers and so-called minorities and public employees and on and on and on. And in Mississippi, the personhood amendment, the one that declares fetuses, zygotes, to be humans, to be persons with all the legal rights appertaining thereunto, I believe is the way they put it. That one appears to be heading for defeat. Am I reading that right? I hope I am. I'll have to check that one further. So anyway, some good news there across the country. Maybe a tipping point has been reached where the American worker, the American middle class, have finally said, you know, I don't give a damn about Democrat or Republican. I've had enough. And whether it is John Kasich, a Republican in Ohio, or a Republican in Ohio, or Barack Obama, a Democrat in Washington, it doesn't make any difference. if the interests of us, the working class, the middle class, is not, if our interests are not respected, then we are going to vote you out of office. So, again, you know, I think it's good news. I hope the Occupy movement has waked people up. What else we got? There's just so much. I guess I should give a little bit of attention to this clown act today of Herman Cain. He was represented by, you know, Herman has spent an awful lot of time here in Atlanta. He was a Neil Bortz favorite. Neil Bortz has a habit of kind of adopting his favorite person of color. He's done this. He's a real racist, but every once in a while, Bortz will adopt, usually an African American, in a manner of speaking, adopt, and it becomes his favorite. It's Bortz's way of saying, "See, I'm not a racist. Look what I'm doing here." And Herman Cain was Bortz's adoptee for a while. When Bortz would take time off from his radio job, Herman Cain would fill in until finally, I think he got a weekend program on WSB here in Atlanta, an ultra-right-wing station that, yeah, I worked for. That's where pretty much where I started my career back before it became ultra-right-wing. It was just kind of conservative. So, but I digressed. His attorney... Bortz is an attorney, too, but he doesn't practice. He has a law degree, let me put it that way. I don't know if he's kept his status as an attorney active. But Lynn Wood, who was the white guy that showed up at Cain's little press conference today, Lynn Wood is an Atlanta attorney. And, you know, I make fun of some of these Southerners, like Jeff Sessions and Haley Barbour. Some of these white Southerners, the way they talk, because all talk like they've got a mouth full of chicken fat or hog jaw or something like that. But I tell you, this Lynn Wood, if you heard him today, he talked for about 2 or 3, 4 minutes before he turned the podium over to Herman. If you heard this boy talk today, I don't know, man. I'm surprised they didn't have a... Southern to English translator standing there, or at least somebody to explain what the hell he was talking about. But but a lot of people outside the South don't realize, or outside Atlanta do not realize, Lynn Wood was there for a very specific reason. Lynn Wood has a reputation of threatening media. He will get in touch with a newspaper, television station, a radio program, whatever, and threaten legal action unless they retract or restate or whatever some statement or some and he's an extreme right winger himself. So there he stood next to Herman Cain, and to media people outside the South, he was just a blob of white man, you know, a Caucasian standing there who sounded like he had a mouth full of grits. But to people who know who he is and what his reputation is, it's very clear that he was there to represent a threat to anyone who might have the temerity to challenge Herman Cain's version of what Herman Cain calls the facts. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Okay, Prairie 2 writes in and says he did not say that tactical nukes could be used. So I better clarify this before he cuts us off from his astute take on economic matters. He writes, "While it's impossible to predict the outcome of the nuclear exchange, once attacked, it's likely that the attacked party would launch everything rather than lose them. What I've said is that the smaller nukes that they have now do, in fact, make their use more likely. It won't end the planet, however, but the survivors will just wish it had. The point that I have been trying to get across is that we can't pretend war won't happen because it's unthinkable." I guess he means nuclear. "Bush, or rather Cheney, came very close to launching a first strike against the Russians. The U.S. has converted the Navy sub missiles from air burst to ground burst in order to take out the Russian and Chinese missile silos and their command and control. Submarines can get in close enough to beat the response time of fixed base missiles. This was why Putin began flying his bombers again as a deterrence, as his subs were all in dry dock for lack of rubles. You can probably thank Robert Gates that this war didn't happen. Definition of terms, small nukes aren't tactical weapons. Tactical nukes were mounted on short-range delivery vehicles for use in battle to deter mass tank attacks or to take out attack submarines. These are largely obsolete now. Multiple warhead missiles were intended to use quite small nukes to take out a larger area instead of using a large warhead that would kick up much more fallout. In other words, they were making war safer." Okay, Bruce. All right. Well, that makes sense. Herman Cain says five women, including the woman who went public, Bialik, are all liars. All of them. They're all liars. Yes, he'll take a polygraph test, maybe, possibly. If, well, let me think about it. In the press conference, he, I don't know. It was the damnedest thing to watch this guy. I don't know how much longer Cain thinks he's going to be a candidate, and I'll tell you why that is. His core, you know, these teabag types just love old Hummin. They love him to death. They want to make him their pet. These are the kind of Caucasians who look at a black man like Herman Cain as kind of a novelty, a toy. Something that they can charge up on their battery chargers and send him out to defeat the white liberals. But when it gets right down to it, these Caucasians would turn on Herman in half a heartbeat and send him back to wherever black folk who are made mascots by white people go. So Herman is headed that way, and one of the reasons we know this is because the elder statesmen now of the Republican Party, the conservative wackos, not the teabag wackos, but the conservative wackos, the big guns in the Republican Party, have decided that Herman has had his 15 minutes in the national spotlight, and now with a continuing to mount number of women who are charging Herman with some sort of sexual impropriety, whether it is shooting off his mouth or trying to reach up a woman's dress or upgrading her hotel room or whatever it is. See, Herman has done the one thing that is inexcusable for Republicans. He has shown that bright white light of attention on a guy who is no more qualified to be president of the United States than your pet dog. I mean, this guy is so far out of his league. Of course, like Sarah Palin, his intent was never to be president of the United States, and it still isn't. Herman is a clown, but he's a money clown. And like I said the other night, he's getting paid. That's all he's doing. He's just getting paid. And but the time is coming. I'll be curious to see how the other seven or eight clowns that show up for that Republican debate tomorrow night. Where's the next one? Who knows? Who cares? I'll be curious to see if they talk about or request that Herman Cain talks about his inability to stop propositioning women. Now, I know everybody's going to say, well, this is 14 years ago. Uh-huh. Well, what about last week or 6 months ago or 5 years ago? And is there a statute of limitations on being a boorish pig? In some instances, no. Limbaugh has been a creep son of a bitch for 25 years. Hannity has been a smug little bastard for two decades. Glenn Beck is still operating on the premise that he can turn his robotic minions loose to destroy America and cause people to kill each other. So it can go on indefinitely. But Herman has all the personality of a sack of no nitrite hot dogs, and his run is just about over. So I would say, you know, Herman will keep showing up for some of these events. He'll keep making statements, but the list of women is going to go on, and I think more and more are going to go public. Herman Cain is not too far removed from any kind of an addict who just can't seem to give it up. You know what I'm saying? We'll be right back.
Jay Farner here.
This hour is sponsored by Jeff Anderson, and his message, Sexual Harassers for Herman Cain. Our motto is, you don't have to be named Chester to be a molester. Herman works just as well. All right, Jeff, thanks for the sponsorship. You don't have to be named Chester to be a molester. Herman works just as well. This guy is just out of control, I swear. Before I get to that, and I am going to get to it for a few moments, I can't resist it. I mean, it's just like when you drive past a multiple injury car wreck. One more thing about nukes in Iran and Israel and the United States and blah, blah, blah. Bruce writes, bunker buster bombs, either conventional or nuclear, that are powerful enough to go after anything buried really deep, are extremely heavy by their nature. Israel doesn't have missiles or aircraft large enough to deliver such a device. So if it happens, it was the U.S. Air Force, even if Israel were to take credit. The U.S. does have conventionally armed ICBMs in its inventory. These are allowed by the START Treaty, and we know this as they must be counted against the allowable heavy delivery vehicles under the treaty. Iran is a long way from developing a nuclear bomb small enough to deliver with any of the relatively small missiles they possess. Okay, thanks, Bruce. So if one of those super heavy bombs are delivered, as Bruce says, you can bet that it was the U.S. that did the delivering. Michael in Roswell says, Herman Cain is proof positive of my old adage that no matter how smart you are, if your ego is bigger than your intellect, it makes you stupid. And what is what he's referring to? Did you hear the line from Herman Cain today when he was, I don't think he was asked at the press conference, but it played today in a piece of video. If he thinks the four people who are on Mount Rushmore should be there, and if not, who should? I'm paraphrasing here. And Cain said something about a person who really should be on there hasn't been elected yet. And then he gave that little sneaky-ass 12-year-old boy smile that he's getting famous for, along with Cigarette Man, his campaign manager, or whatever that guy is who did the cigarette commercial. That guy looks like he's about 4 inches away from a massive coronary anyway. If you've noticed, those dark bags under his eyes, and he's got that mottled skin that says, I'm about to have a massive coronary, so I might as well go ahead and continue smoking. But Cain had that little smirky smile. It's not really a smirk. It's not like an adult smirk. It's more like a childish grin, like, oh, you caught me masturbating. You know what I'm talking about, right? He should be on Mount Rushmore. Mm-hmm. And the other thing with, I'm sure this was some kind of a message to the American public from Herman Cain's deep and desperately crying out for help subconscious mind. You know, the arrogance and the kind of little boy attitude. And it's amazing. Herman can come across with all the arrogance that a CEO or a corporate chieftain can deliver so effectively against his underlings, but he also comes across with that kind of 12-year-old pre- or post-adolescent boy thing about, what? Oh, don't connect the boy thing to the race thing. I'm talking about the age that he comes across as. And he does come across like a pre-adolescent boy, you know, who still looks at his father's old Playboy magazines that he found up in the attic. You know, that's just Herman. But there was some kind of a cry coming out of Herman's unconscious today. And the way we know about this, he has five accusers. And interestingly, behind him on this podium were five American flags. Do, 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 do. Why not three? Why not one? Why any? Five American flags. Five female accusers to this point. Oh, Herman, you are absolutely a vaudeville act. You really are. And you notice how all of a sudden now it started out that it was the liberal media who were going after Herman and trying to ruin his call by God to be Moses and lead us all out of the wilderness, the liberal media. And then it was, of course, the devils over at Politico. And then it was that Rick Perry, that Caucasian from Texas, that dumbass Rick. I mean, these two are battling. Rick Perry and Herman Cain are battling for the dumbassiest award in this Republican lineup. And now, all of a sudden, it's the Democratic machine. I don't understand what, you know, why the Democratic machine is all of a sudden the object of his ire. Because the truth is, the Democratic Party would love to see this halfwit get the nomination. They would love to see it. So, you know, Herman is just one of those people who just can't seem to take responsibility for anything. Of course, you know, how many men want to take responsibility for the fact that they are sexual predators? How many men want to take responsibility for the fact that they say things like, as they're trying to push a woman's head down into their crotch, well, you do want a job, don't you? So, you know, Herman, I know you can't see this, but I'm raising my middle finger to you and your ilk. And I hope you stay around as long as possible. But the elder statesmen in this filthy Republican Party have just about had enough of you, because you're making the entire Republican Party visible. You're not making it look like something it's not, because this is what the Republican Party really is. I mean, at its very core, it's anti-woman. It's anti-worker. It's anti-justice. It's anti-decency. It's anti-everything. So what Herman is doing, without realizing it, is pulling back the curtain, and all of a sudden we see the truth of the Republican Party. So the big heads, you know, the great big ones, the large Caucasians that run the Republican Party, people like Haley Barbour and Bill Bennett, and you notice how the big boys in the Republican Party are literally big boys, you know, great big old Caucasians, you know, the kind of walk around and, you know, we're going to stomp on those Mexicans and stomp on those Negroes and stomp on those women, you know. So Herman is being warned by the Caucasians that run the Republican Party that his 15 minutes are up. So that's why Herman is going to go. But now, you see, it went from the liberal media to Politico to the Rick Perry camp to now the Democratic machine. I wonder who is going to be next. And wasn't it so classy of the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, to once again raise his program to the level of belly button lint when he, Limbaugh, said, what's this woman's name? Buy a lick? Buy a lick. God damn, that's funny. Victim of Herman Cain's Russian hands and Roman fingers is Karen Krauschar, one of the two women who settled sexual harassment claims against Cain with the National Restaurant Association. She spoke publicly for the first time today. She is now a spokeswoman at the Treasury Department, and she said in an interview that she was upset that her name had leaked into some press reports. And she said she had decided to speak out now that her identity was publicly known. Ms. Krauscher's public statement came less than an hour before O'Herman made his appearance at a press conference in Phoenix. So, according to Herman, all these women are lying. They're lying through their teeth. There's not an ounce of truth to this. Not a bit. Nothing. There's nothing there. So, just move on. And that's what I should do. I realize, but it's just I don't know. It's just so weird to see this. Kevin in Colorado Springs writes, I listened with rapt attention when I wasn't laughing, that is, to Mr. Cain's press conference today. I wonder if Mr. Cain realized during or after his press conference just how much his words told the truth of what happened. For instance, Mr. Cain used the line during one of his answers to the press questions by saying, quote, when this thing came to light, end quote. And in another part, he said, talking about the latest person to come forward, that, quote, when this latest matter was revealed, end quote. Well, it's just like the five flags, right? Mike, have you ever known an innocent person when claiming his or her innocence to use these types of words? No. They use much different language, such as when the woman first made the allegations, and or now when this latest person comes forward, not words like came to light or when this latest matter was revealed. Herman, I think you have a guilty conscience. And did you notice, Kevin goes on, that he seemed to be drawing heavily from the Dick Cheney playbook entitled, If You Tell a Lie Long Enough and Loud Enough, Eventually It Will Be Believed. Unfortunately for Mr. Cain, he's told so many different stories, and for a person who said during the news conference that he has a pretty good memory, he sure also said enough times in the same conference that he just can't remember. I also got a chuckle out of the line he used to refer to the latest accuser, calling her a troubled young woman. Now he's blaming the victim as well. In fact, if you can sum up Herman's press conference in the following words, I can't remember. And it never happened. And while he didn't exactly say this, it was implied enough that all the accusers are lying. Well, no, he did say that, Kevin. Despite all this, Mr. Cain is, if not the leading contender of the Republican nomination, one of them anyway. That's a pretty sad commentary on our political system, or lack of it, all by itself. And Kevin goes on a few more sentences, but yeah, that you're absolutely right, Kevin. It, I mean, he is like anybody who is egregiously guilty of this kind of criminal. I call it criminal activity. I guess it's a matter of degrees, isn't it? If you put your hand up somebody's dress and say, "Well," when she protests, say, "Well, you want a job, don't you?" Is that the same as dragging a woman by the hair into the bushes and physically assaulting her? It's a matter of degrees, isn't it? Both instances are sexual assault. So Herman Cain is guilty. There is no question that he is guilty. And he is revealing his guilt a little bit at a time. Unbeknownst to him, he's not even where he's doing it. But this is the way so many people who are guilty of this kind of activity, this is how they do reveal themselves. Herman thinks he's so slick. You know, he stands up there at the podium and just, you know, tries to act like he's in control. Now, I have to say that this 10-cent press corps that interviewed him today, I mean, I never heard such asinine, half-witted questions in my life. You know, why didn't they say to him, "Oh, Mr. Cain, is it a normal procedure for you, a married man, to be alone with women in cars or to alter their sleeping arrangements at a hotel in Washington or to take them out for drinks? Is this normal activity for you, Mr. Herman Cain, a married man?" You know, none of that was brought up. And that's because we have a wounded and desperately ineffective press corps in this country that, you know, refuses to ask the right questions, even when the right questions are begging to be asked. You know what I'm saying? So Herman Cain has his what do you call it? Not codependent, but his enabler. He has all kinds of enablers in the American press corps. You know, they don't want Herman to leave, not quite yet. They're willing to dick around like this with these half-witted questions just to see how far Herman will go before he totally self-destructs. His head blows off and all the springs and gears come rolling out on the floor.
Shout the last word. Put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ. That's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down.
Before the hour, Kevin writes, it's interesting that Herman Cain is always referred to in the media as the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza, even though that was way, way back in the 80s. Since then, he's worked as a Washington, D.C. lobbyist. But that doesn't sound as good on a resume for a president of the United States, does it? This got me wondering what the other Republican primary candidates were doing 20, 30 years ago. Rick Perry was a Democrat in the Texas House of Representatives. Michelle Bachmann was a research assistant and a student. Rick Santorum was a lawyer. He represented the World Wrestling Federation, arguing that professional wrestling should be exempt from federal anabolic steroids regulations because it was not a sport. Sarah Palin, the winner of the Miss Wasilla beauty pageant, she comes in third in Miss Alaska pageant, played flute in the talent portion, received the Miss Congeniality Award, and elopes with her high school sweetheart, Todd. Newt Gingrich was in the U.S. House of Representatives, brought ethics charges against Jim Wright for using book deals to circumvent campaign finance laws, while he himself released his own book, Window of Opportunity, part of whose publicity expenses were covered by a limited partnership, which raised $105,000 from Republican political supporters. Plus, he was boinking anything he could get near, Kevin. And Ron Paul served in the House of Representatives and mounted a failed presidential bid, basically the exact same thing he's been doing ever since. Right. That's very true, isn't it? Bruce is in Santa Paula, California?
That's right.
Well, hi, Bruce.
Buenas noches, Miguel.
Yeah, back at
you. At the opening of your show, you mentioned the Stuxnet virus, and that was written by U.S. and Israeli team to disable the Iranian centrifuges.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that the Stuxnet virus, actually its entire mission was to infect only one piece of equipment, which is called the Siemens Programmable Logic Controller. And it's a device that's used in a lot of industrial applications. It's already been, the virus has spread like any virus would, and has been found in many places in the East, India and Indonesia.
But that was an unexpected or unintended consequence. It's my understanding it was developed specifically to disable the Iranian nuclear program, whatever direction that nuclear program was going. Are you saying that that was not true?
No, I'm saying that it was true. But
In fact,
the virus itself was designed to attack one piece of equipment.
Right, but it happened to be a key piece of equipment.
Let me go just a little farther.
Okay.
That same Siemens programmable logic controller, what was used in the Fukushima reactors, the same piece of equipment that was used, that was a control, the controller for the nuclear reactors in Fukushima.
So what does that suggest to you? That maybe
suggests to me there's a possibility,
right,
a possibility that the virus could have gotten into the Japanese controller as well.
prior to the tidal wave and the
I think that it may have impacted. I mean, the tidal wave was obviously there, and the earthquake was obviously there. And I'm not trying to go too far with it, but I'm just bringing up a point.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that before. I've never heard that possibility exists.
It does exist. Mm-hmm. It is. There were several different articles that mentioned it, and the fact that it was exactly the same controller, if it had even one tiny bit of impact on. Mm-hmm. On a bad situation, it could have turned it into a disaster. So, we'll never know. But, it's at least important that people understand that it's part of what it did was that's specifically the only thing that it did was attack this Siemens controller.
Boy, so, talk about unintended consequences.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, I figured, well, I'd bring it up.
Pretty scary stuff.
That plutonomy, that Citibank plutonomy report?
Say again?
Did you see that Citibank plutonomy report, that analysis? Basically, real quickly, it was one of your callers mentioned it the other night. I looked it up and I sent you a link to it. It's a it was an internal analysis that was done. That plutonomy is basically the economy driven by the plutonomy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I've never heard that word before until the caller used it the other
night.
Right,
and I had neither. It's a coined word. It's the economy of the plutocracy.
I see.
So, plutonomy.
Right, and the idea being that anybody below the 1% really doesn't matter anyway.
That's right. Well, they're showing how important that 1% is in terms of spending and disposable income, and that they can focus on the 1% and get more money than if they focus on the bottom 60%.
That's great. It's great to be an American these days, isn't
it,
Bruce?
Sure is.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in, Bruce. Thanks for that information, too. I appreciate it. MSNBC is now reporting that the so-called personhood amendment in Mississippi has been defeated, which I don't know. It's just kind of, I don't know. It blows my stereotypes all to hell, doesn't it? Because I really felt that was going, based on what I know about Mississippi, and Mississippi is not that far from Georgia, and, I've spent time in Mississippi, I've followed Haley Barbour and his slimy politics for probably 30 years now, and my stereotyping of Mississippi and the people who live there has never been very flattering at all. As a matter of fact, I've really come down on the entire state of Mississippi almost as much as Alabama. And tonight they defeated this personhood amendment, which is just a stunning reversal to me of what I thought would happen. I thought they were going to pass this. And apparently it was defeated roughly 60% to 40%. So to all the people in Mississippi whom I have deeply insulted over the past number of years, let me say that I still believe you're a bunch of monkeys. It's just that probably this one was even too far for you folks to go, right? So, you know, I'll apologize up to a point, but I still think that, Mississippi is a state of mind. Not a very healthy one at that, rather than a place to raise your kids or, you know, do whatever. So I'll give kind of a, not a half apology, but maybe a 13, 14, 15% apology of all the stereotyping I've done of Mississippi and the dumbasses that I consider to be residents of that state. And a lot of them not out of their choosing. And I don't mean everybody. I just mean there's so many religious fundamentalists in Mississippi. It's almost as bad as Georgia in that regard. And I figured that they would go ahead and make this law that as soon as a sperm touches an egg, woo, person. So, congratulations to, apparently, there are rational people that live in Mississippi. I had no idea. I mean, I knew there were maybe 7 or 12, but I had no idea there were this many. If this thing was defeated by roughly 60 to 40%, gosh, am I going to have to stop viciously making fun of white Southerners? Man, I hope not. Aaron is in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello, Aaron.
Well, hello there, Mr. Malloy. One of the great heroes of our time.
You're right.
I know it. I'm saying it in a jokey way, but
thank
I mean,
you.
It's not a joke. It really is not.
Hey, wait a second. Can you hold on just a second, Aaron? I just wanted to say, I think I forgot to say it, that this hour is sponsored by Jeff Anderson, and his message is Sexual Harassers for Herman Cain. Apparently, that's a new group. The motto is, you don't have to be named Chester to be a molester. Herman works just as well. All right. Thanks for the sponsorship, Jeffrey. All right. Go ahead, Arnold. Or Aaron. I'm sorry. Aaron.
I am not, in fact, Arnold, but maybe someday I will be.
Okay. Okay.
No, seriously, I did just want to briefly make you blush because, you know, It seems like there's finally some momentum building towards, you know, possibly tilting towards sanity. And I really hope so. But you know, who has been a more consistent and stronger voice for sanity and right thinking for longer than any of these other fools who some of whom are trying to jump on the bandwagon now, other than Mr. Mike Malloy? So I just want to make sure credit is given, you know, because you have been an oasis in the wilderness,
or in the desert,
I guess.
That is so kind of you, Aaron. I appreciate the comment very, very much, and thanks for the compliment. That's very, very nice.
No, it may have actually been a somewhat selfish compliment when I add this part, because more than anyone else, when I listen to you on the radio, I'd say 99% of the time, whatever you're saying or the way you react to what you're talking about or what you hear or the way you think through something, you're virtually always just like basically taking the words or thoughts like straight out of my brain.
Well, maybe we're brothers from different mothers. Right, Aaron? Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. We gotta get out of here. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. Thanks, Aaron.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, this hour has been sponsored, the whole thing, by Jeff Anderson, who's apparently referencing a group called Sexual Harassers for Herman Cain. And the motto of that group is, you don't have to be named Chester to be a molester. Herman works just as well. Jeff must be part of the Democratic machine. Or maybe Jeff works for the Rick Perry camp. Or maybe Jeff works for Politico. No, Jeff must be part of the liberal media. All of whom have been charged by Mr. Cain as being the cause of all his troubles. They did it. Not me. All right, Arnold, what's up?
Man, how come he can't call the name Turd Blossom? I believe he had a little something to do with it myself.
You think?
I'm enjoying the show tonight, man. The way you said about Mississippi.
Yeah.
And those things, like in my state tonight. In my state tonight.
In Wake County,
which is county surrounding Raleigh.
Right.
Where the school board that turned Republican now gone back tonight to Democrat because the Republicans had introverted and changed up. It was sending us all back to bringing back all those anti-segregation laws and, you know.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the voters of Wake County put Democrats on the school board?
I mean, they went back and took the school board back. I think there's only one Republican left on that school board tonight.
As a result of the voting today?
as a result of the voting day nationwide. This thing.
Well, I'll be double damned. You're kidding me. Because, you know, I lived in Raleigh a couple times. I went to NC State for a while. I didn't graduate from there, but I went to NC State. I know Wake County. I know Raleigh. I know that, you know, that we've talked about this before, but right. I am surprised that they got rid of Republicans off the school board. Well, hallelujah.
They took it back over. The Democrats are in control again. And they need to go back and change those things that the Republicans did to go back and change this. But I didn't call you for that tonight. I called you.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it because I had no idea that was a ballot issue tonight in North Carolina. I almost missed voting here in our county near Atlanta for a continuation of a special local option sales tax, a 1 cent sales tax that has been on the books now for a number of years, and that money goes to fund school districts, and it is desperately needed for obvious reasons. And you know, about 6 o'clock tonight, I went, oh my God, I completely forgot, so dashed out and voted. So I didn't know anything. For some reason, Arnold, I just drew a blank about all the elections, all the voting going on today. So I'm glad you told me about the Wake County thing. Thank you.
Yeah. My wife had to remind me today.
Yeah, I hear you.
Before I went to work. Oh, man, listen, I told my wife, I told all my friends, I said, now, just watch this Republican Party turn on a dime when it comes to finding out that Herman Cain had molested some white women. But you know what? Where are the good old boys at in the Republican Party? What has happened?
Well, they're working behind the scenes, Steve, Arnold. You got to understand, and I know you already know this, that the Caucasians that support Herman have not had some conversion on the road to Damascus where all of a sudden they are ready to respect people of any color other than pale. What they're doing, those teabagger types that have been supporting Herman, it's their way of first of all, easing their own insidious guilt about their attitude toward people who are not Caucasian. But secondly, and I think more important perhaps, is a lot of these Caucasians do this to push back against white liberals. These Caucasian Republicans, they you know, they have no more interest. Look what they've done to Obama. I mean, Obama, who is of mixed race. I don't know about Herman, but Obama, everybody knows he comes from a black parent and a white parent, and they have, you know, these teabaggers have gone after him like he's a communist, a socialist, he's not even an American citizen. You know, Obama's done a lot of things I disagree with, but for God's sake, go after him on the issues, not on this other stuff. So this support, the Herman, this is where Caucasians make me crazy, Arnold, because it gets very confusing. You don't know.
I understand. Very, very much what you're talking about.
Right.
Just look back to the election of 2006 in Tennessee. United States Senator, I think his name is Harold Ford.
Yeah, right.
Who is
right.
Like maybe 20 times lighter than Herman Cain.
Right.
And he was leading up to the following week of that campaign.
Right.
He was leading in the polls until they threw that red meat to those white people. Said, "Hey, he dating white people, dating white girls."
But Ford is a player. He always was. I know. They leave that stuff back, and they wait until just the right moment, and then they toss it out. No, I agree with you. I agree. There is political chicanery involved here, but Herman Cain is a fool. Herman Cain is a moron. I mean,
he's a bad fool, man.
Right.
He's a bad fool, and he's a high stepping, you know, that kind of high stepping Negro. That said, yes, sir, boss, we'll get it straight. And those Negroes over there, boss, they lazy,
and just ain't no good. Arnold, you know, Arnold, no, ease up. You're not supposed to be talking to a white man like that. That's secret. Secret talk. You're not supposed to be talking to me like that.
Well, although
I love it. I mean, you know.
That's how he do it. That's how he do it, man. He's kept my century picnic stroller reward of the whole century, the decade. I mean, everything. This guy's got it.
I hear you.
All the stuff about Clarence Thomas. This guy right here takes it all up.
I hear you. Hey, listen, we got to get out of here. But I got to check the paper tomorrow to see how badly these Republican dogs were whipped you know,
all
over the country tonight. Arnold, take care, okay? I appreciate you checking in, pal. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Interesting polling today indicated that the American public, you already know this, the American public is highly pessimistic about what is going on in this country politically. And, gee, that's a surprise, right? But the polling indicates that what people are looking for now is not who to blame, but who's going to get us out of this mess. And, of course, Herman Cain. Oh, God. No, don't. Okay. There pretty much is not someone on the Republican side who can get us out of this. Who does that leave? It leaves a Democratic president who seems not interested in getting us out of this. And I realize his powers are limited, but he is the chief executive, and he has an entire cabinet filled with executive officers who can pursue policy by any number of means. It doesn't have to be done through the legislative process. There are all sorts of ways that a president can pursue fulfillment of what he considers or she considers to be policy matters that matter. And this president's not doing that at all. So what I have here this hour is, I think, a very clear example of what the 99%, what the Occupy movement is talking about. And this is on the front page of the New York Times this morning. And it's about how different banks that are regulated by the Security and Exchange Commission, investment banks, the big names, you'll know them in a second, they're very familiar, how they give the middle finger to the SEC, how the SEC is just a little puppy dog, that instead of regulating these investment banks, they just do whatever they're told to do by the banks. That's the impression you get. They don't follow up with serious charges against these predatory sons of bitches. If you want to know what's wrong with the United States, this is, and the global economy, really, not just our economy, but the global economy. I think this article in the Times this morning clearly, and it's written so ignorant folk like me can understand it. So if I can understand it, you can understand it. And I want to get into it a little bit. They cite as an example, last month, Citigroup agreed to pay $285 million as a settlement. Now, not a fine. See, the wording here is very, very, very precise. Citigroup agreed to pay a $285 million amount to settle civil charges that Citigroup had defrauded customers during the housing bubble. And the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, got a typical pledge from the company when they agreed with this $285 million, when they agreed to that amount, which, you know, I know, is nothing. That's a rounding error. That $285 million to Citigroup, that's a hiccup. It's not even a hiccup. It's not even a burp. It's, it might be a little tiny fart, but that's about all it is. $285 million? Are you kidding me? To Citigroup? But here's the pledge that the SEC got from Citigroup. Citigroup will never violate one of the main anti-fraud provisions of the nation's security laws again. Promise, cross my heart, hope to die, haha, chuckle, chuckle, nudge, nudge. Now, to folks like you and me, that seems kind of weird. What? Citigroup was merely promising not to do something that the law already says you may not do. Well, I promise not to commit murder. But you just did a murder. No, I didn't. There's a corpse there, and I have a gun in my hand, but I'll pay a fine. But there's no murder been committed, but there's a corpse there. Well, it may appear to be a corpse, but you're not really sure, are you? Well, I can go over and take a look, see if it has a pulse. No, you can't do that. Just take our word for it. It may appear to be a corpse lying there, and we may appear to have a gun in our hand, and all of that may register with your eyes and your brain, but we promise never to do it again. But we didn't do anything. We just promise we'll never do the thing we haven't done again. What? That's just the way the game is played, Mr. Malloy. And that is the way the game is played. Now, when this $285 million settlement was reached last month, and Citigroup promised never to violate an anti-fraud provision again, it was not the first time that Citigroup made that promise. It's like, well, yeah, there are three dead bodies here, and we have three guns. One I'm holding, two are on the table. All three have been recently fired. There are three corpses. There's nobody near us except the corpses, me, for a radius of about 3,000 miles. But I didn't do it, and I'll never do it again. But there's three bodies there now. You may think there's three bodies there. You may see three guns on the table, or two guns on the table, one in my hand, but that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't prove anything. I'm just telling you that we didn't do this and we'll never do it again. What? They see, that's how it works. Citigroup's main brokerage subsidiary, its predecessors or its parent company agreed not to violate the very same anti-fraud statute that they just paid a $285 million settlement for. They agreed never to do it in 2010, July 2010. They agreed in May of 2006. They agreed in March of 2005. They agreed in April of 2000. We didn't do anything, but we'll never do it again. Okay, here's your fine. Okay, we'll pay it, but we didn't do anything. These three dead bodies, the three guns, has nothing to do with us. Well, there are five dead bodies there now and five guns. No, had nothing to do with us. It may appear that we did this. These people may appear to be dead. But we didn't do it. And we won't admit to it. Well, let me change it. We won't admit to anything. We won't admit to doing it or not doing it. But then why are you paying the fine? Because the agreement says we didn't not do it or did do it. So that's the agreement that we preferred. But if you're totally innocent, why would you pay a fine? This is not about innocence or guilt. Oh. This is about an agreement. And we're not agreeing to agree to anything that we haven't already agreed to. What? Now, this is how it goes. Now, it's not just Citigroup. Nearly all of the biggest financial companies have settled fraud cases by promising that they would never again violate an anti-fraud law, only to have the SEC conclude that they do it again and again and again. You know the companies? Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America. The list goes on and on. We didn't do anything. Yeah, but there are dead people all over the room, and you have the only guns for 5,000 miles, and the guns have been fired within the past 5 minutes, and these corpses have been here for the past 5 minutes. What do you mean? No, we didn't do it. You didn't do it. No, but we'll go ahead and, have you got a settlement handy there about these corpses and these guns? Well, I just happen to have a settlement. Okay, we'll do the settlement, but we're not agreeing to anything. Oh. Now, this is the way it's done. This is what the 99%ers, this is what the Occupy movement, this is what the average rational American should be standing up on his or her hind legs and screaming about. This is what we should be, this should be the issue that activates us to the point that we drag the bankers into the streets and bring out the guillotine. Because they're not going to change. They're not going to do a thing different from what they've done over and over and over again. And then the SEC toddles up and says, "Well, you didn't or did or whatever. Do it again." No, we didn't do anything. We didn't do anything, but we didn't do anything either. Okay, well, we're going to fine you again. Well, it's not a fine. Okay, we're going to ask for a settlement again. Well, how much is it this time? Or, I mean, how much is it? Well, it's $200 million. Oh, okay. Well, we have to sign the agreement again? Yes. This just keeps going on and on. More when we come back.
Well, we're walking there, treating like a dog, gonna hit him in the head with the doo-doo law. Republicans, one and all, their tallywhackers are not as small. Makes bank president twitch in a ditch. Oh. I hate banks. Yeah. I hate banks. Can't stand them.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So the continued law breaking by these banking firms, the continued violation of nation security laws, as long as this goes on, you know, we can make fun of this clown, Herman Cain, or talk about Barack Obama, continues to allow Guantanamo to be open. Oh, I realize that the Congress did not appropriate money to fund it, fund the closing. I realize it's not all his fault, but you understand what I'm saying. We can talk about these sideshows forever. But the so-called investment banking system, which is not about investment, it's about the top 1% playing the rest of us for goddamn fools, absolute fools. They just keep doing it. And the so-called Securities and Exchange Commission that was set up by Roosevelt after the Great Depression, after it turned out the stock market crash in 1929 was caused by the same people, the same firms that are causing this. They're predators. They destroy everything they touch. They don't give a goddamn how many children starve to death, how many men commit suicide because there's no jobs, how many women have nervous breaks, breakdowns because they don't know what the hell, where to go, who to turn to. They don't care. These big firms, the 1%, they will continue to gouge and pillage and murder and kill and destroy until somebody destroys them. It is that simple. It's that simple. And the proof is how they do their filthy business over and over and over again, the same thing. New York Times analysis of so-called enforcement actions by the SEC over the past 15 years found at least 51 cases in which the SEC concluded that Wall Street firms had broken anti-fraud laws that they had agreed never to break. And these 51 cases were committed by 19 different capitalist predator firms. Companies like Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America. The same names over and over and over again. And these scum have their worms, their moles, so deeply embedded in the Obama administration. What are you going to do? Barack Obama may be just a wonderful human being. And he may not be. I don't know. But he has surrounded himself with these kind of vermin. So every time I hear him talk about how, the bank's got to not charge $5 for you to use your debit card. You know, I just want to scream. And I usually do scream. You know, I just scream. Kathy calls from a different room of the house. What's the matter? Nothing. I just, something about, oh, investment banks? Yeah. Okay. On Wednesday, Judge Jed Rakoff of the Federal District Court of Manhattan, who is a critic of this weak, phony front operation, the SEC, a front operation for these predatory banks, the judge is scheduled, that's tomorrow, to review the Citigroup settlement, this new one, $285 million to settle charges that Citigroup had defrauded customers during the housing bubble. And Citigroup, as part of the settlement, agreed not to do something that the law already forbids, but had done it over and over and over again. Over and over and over again. They keep doing it! These banks are like child molesters. Apparently, they cannot stop the banks. Just like a child molester cannot stop until he's locked up for the rest of his life. The bankers cannot stop defrauding, lying, cheating, stealing. They can't. They're incapable. Over and over and over again, they're charged with this stuff. And every time, part of the settlement, okay, we'll never do it again. We didn't do anything, but we won't do it again. Well, what is it that you're promising not to do again that you didn't do? Well, I don't know, whatever the settlement says. Well, what about all those dead bodies around you and the smoking guns? Will you stop talking about that? We'll never do it again. We didn't do it, but we won't do it again. It doesn't make any difference how many times they keep doing it. And what happens to the economy, what's left of this economy? It keeps getting gutted further and further, hollowed out further and further. More people being stolen from, more of America's internal workings being eaten away by these goddamn bankers, the banks themselves. How much more of this are we going to take? This can be stopped. The first thing to do is to drag the bankers into the street and take their pants off and make them stay naked from the waist down for at least a month, no matter what they do. That's just the beginning. There's more of the story. Don't you dare leave. We'll be right back.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So what we're talking about are the promises that are made and remade by these firms, these banking firms, so-called investment banking firms, in SEC fraud cases. Companies like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, they continue to violate the law with impunity. And every time they are caught, the times that they're caught by the SEC, they are fined. Well, it's not really a fine. They're charged in an agreement to never do again what they insist they didn't do that time. Well, then why are you paying the fine? Oh, it's just part of the agreement. I mean, this is stuff that makes, if you try to figure it out and understand it, you become insane. And like child molesters, these big banks are never going to stop what they do. They're going to continue to pillage, steal, loot, commit fraud forever, ever and ever and ever, until some of them go to jail. Serious time. I mean, take these sons of bitches and put them in prison for 15 years. That will stop it. But until that happens, it will not stop. So, this latest agreement, $285 million that Citigroup agreed to pay to settle civil charges that it had defrauded customers during the housing bubble. That agreement is going to be reviewed tomorrow by Judge Jed Rakoff of the Federal District Court in Manhattan, who is a critic of the SEC, thank goodness. Judge Rakoff has asked the agency, the SEC, what it does to ensure that companies do not repeat the same offense. And the judge wants to know whether or not the SEC has ever brought contempt charges for the chronic violators. The SEC said in a court filing yesterday that it had not brought any contempt charges against large financial firms in the last 10 years. Do you understand that? While these banks repeatedly violated the law, securities fraud laws, in other words, while they stole, pillaged, looted, the SEC just sat there, oh, okay, well, you did it again? Oh, wait a minute. Hey, you got another agreement back there? We'll bring it up here. We got, you know, it's Citigroup again. Okay, thank you. All right, we'll have the agreement up here in a few minutes, Citigroup. You guys got to stop this. It's making us look bad. Stop what? You know, stop stealing. We're not stealing. Oh, no, I know you're not stealing, but you got to stop. Okay, you got to stop asking us to bring out these agreements. Oh, we don't ask you to do that. Oh, that's right. We bring them out. So the judge wants to know about this. The SEC has been criticized, you see, for missing warning signs that a bank was about to be caught or commit massive fraud. According to the Times, the pattern of repeated accusations of security law violations adds another layer of concerns about enforcing the law. Not only does the SEC fail to catch many instances of wrongdoing, how about the word crime? Not only does the SEC fail to catch instances of crime, when it is on the case, financial firms often pay a relatively small price and then they go back out and do it again. And why shouldn't they? There is no enforcement. There is no penalty. To steal, loot, and defraud the American public carries no penalty whatsoever, except these goddamn agreements, which don't mean anything. So, okay, Senator Carl Levy, you want to hear some weasel words? Do you want to realize, here's an example of why the Democratic Party is as useless as teats on a bull. The Democratic Party may not be as thoroughly corrupted as the Republican Party. It's damn close. Senator Carl Levin, a Michigan Democrat, who's chairman of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations and has led several inquiries into Wall Street, several, said the SEC's method of settling these fraud cases is, quote, a symbol of weak enforcement. It doesn't do much in the way of deterrence, and it doesn't do much in the way of punishment, I don't think. I don't think? Senator Carl Levin, the chairman of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, and he's seen this over and over again. He's conducted hearings into the fraud committed by the 1% over and over and over again. And the best he can come up with is, well, you know, the SEC doesn't do much in the way of punishment, I don't think. Uh-huh. Well, here's some more. Barbara Roper, Director of Investor Protection. Investor Protection for the Consumer Federation of America said, quote, now, you know, I'm not saying that this is a government agency. It's not. This is a advocacy group. But anyway, even Barbara Roper says, quote, you can look at the record and see that it clearly suggests that what the SEC doing is not deterring repeat offenses. And then she says, you have to at least raise the question if other alternatives might be more effective. What? You have to at least raise the question of what? Of enforcing the law? Ms. Roper, I realize you're not a government employee. I realize that you are work for consumers in this, and I'm not trying to be a real bastard here. But, Ms. Roper, I'll tell you what. You want to try an experiment? Go to your nearest convenience store and pick up a six-pack of beer and a loaf of bread and one of those bacteria-laden hot dogs that spins around on the little grill thing inside, and just pick them up and walk out the door. Don't pay. Okay, and sit out on the curb and just drink it and eat it, or pour it down the gutter, which would make more sense. And just wait, the police will show up, and you will be taken to jail, and you will be charged with shoplifting. Okay, now if you have a clean record, Miss Roper, you could probably plead, "Oh, I was on Xanax or something." And okay, so the judge will fine you $500 and put you on 30 days probation, and then the next morning go back and do it again. And whatever the judge imposes this time, maybe he'll put you in jail for 10 days, then go back and do it again. Huh? You get the point, don't you, Ms. Roper? So when you say that the SEC's actions are not deterring these offenses, and you have to at least raise the question if other alternatives might be more effective, that grates on my ears, Ms. Roper, like fingers down a chalkboard. Why don't you come out and say the SEC should turn these cases over to the Department of Justice, and they should be charged criminally, and these predators should be locked up. For a long time, poor bastards, the ones that are making $20 million a year, or $50 million a year, or $1 billion a year, and when I say make, I don't mean make, I mean they're stealing this. This is the 1%. They do nothing to earn their keep, nothing. They steal, goddammit, they steal. These are like Al Capones. These are like, just pick a criminal. That's all they are. They're Jesse James. They're thieves. They're liars. And they're responsible for death and destruction. And the best we can do is say, well, it raises the question if other alternatives might be more effective in getting them to stop breaking the law. You take the chairman of some of these so-called investment firms, and the next time they do this, put them in prison. Put them in prison for a decade. And take away all their assets. And when they come out of prison, instruct them that part of their probation, they can never again even walk into a bank, much less run one. That from now on, they'll have to do what a lot of Americans have to do, go to those instant money lenders, the paychecks people, turn in your title and we'll give you money on your car title. Of course, these guys won't have cars, so I don't know what they're going to turn in. And then it's just a nominal 300% interest to pay it back, which you never do. Let these miserable predator goddamn capitalist thieves have a taste of what they're doing to the rest of us. Is that so difficult? Is that not the proper way to do it? Doesn't it say to do this in the Bible? I mean, we're a Christian nation, aren't we? We have Judeo-Christian traditions. Doesn't it say something in the holy text about not stealing, lying, cheating, or coveting your neighbor's ass? Doesn't it? Well, then why not do something about it? Come on, you right-wingers. Come on, you're always telling innocent atheists like me that this is a Christian nation. Why don't you step up to the plate and say, ooh, enough of this, huh? You two-faced hypocrites. The SEC says that they allow these kind of settlements because it is far less costly than taking wealthy Wall Street firms to court and risk losing the case. Ah, I see. Tell you what, just end the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and take the money from those wars from one day and you'll have billions. And then pursue these sons of bitches to the ends of the earth. Lock them up. Confiscate all of their assets, anything they have put together since they have been in the investment banking business, take it away from them. Redistribute it among the poor, redistribute it among the people who are losing their homes, redistribute it among the people whose unemployment is running out, and maybe you will approach the edge of justice. It won't be just. You will approach the event horizon of these black holes of predatory capitalism that are destroying the entire planet. No? Can't do that? Oh, damn. Articles are very enlightening as far as it went in the New York Times this morning about promises made and remade by firms in Securities and Exchange Commission fraud cases. These are companies who steal, who violate the law. They are caught by the SEC, which does not have criminal enforcement power, by the way. And they promise never to do it again. The SEC gives them a little multi-million-dollar slap on the wrist, which means nothing to these firms. Then they go right back out and do it again, over and over and over again. And either the SEC needs a power to enforce criminal law against these predators, or they need to turn over the Justice Department, which is the normal course of action. When, especially repeat offenders, again, imagine what would happen if you go into Macy's and steal an article of clothing, and then after you are fined or whatever happens to you, you go back and do it again, or you go back and do it again, and you go back and do it again. At what point? In some states, then you become three strikes and you're out, and you go to prison for the rest of your life for stealing underwear. These sons of bitches continue to do this to the tune of billions, trillions of dollars, and nothing happens. Nothing. So for you right-wingers who listen, if you want to know what the Occupy Wall Street action was and is about, the core of it, here it is. This is what it's about. The fraud, the theft, the law-breaking committed over and over and over again by companies like Citigroup and Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase, over and over and over again, and nobody, nobody stops them. For example, Bank of America's securities unit has agreed four times since 2005 not to violate a major anti-fraud statute. And another four times, that's nine or eight, not to violate a separate law. And they continue to do it. Merrill Lynch, which Bank of America acquired in 2008, has separately agreed not to violate the same two statutes seven times since 1999. What happened when you were a kid and your mother told you not to do something, or your father, whoever was the disciplinarian in your family, and you just kept doing it? Did you get a timeout? Did you get switched? Did you get sent to your room? Did you have to sit in the corner? I don't know. Was there any consequence to your actions? The reason I ask that, it makes me wonder, the executives at these investment so-called firms who just keep violating the law over and over and over again after they stand in front of the SEC commission and say, well, we didn't really do it, but we won't do it again. We promise, cross our hearts and hope to die. I didn't mean that part. But we will never do it again. Well, and then they go do it again and again and again. Of the 19 companies that the New York Times found by the SEC to be repeat offenders over the last 15 years, 16 of the 19 declined to comment.
You're doing a story on what? Oh, no, no, we don't. No. Go away, New York Times reporter. No. Get away.
And the offenders? American International Group, AIG. How much did we spend to bail them out? Ameriprise, Bank of America, Bear Stearns, Columbia Management, Deutsche Asset Management, Credit Suisse, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, Putnam Investments, Raymond James, RBC, Dane Rauscher, UBS, Wells Fargo Wachovia. God, it's like going down a list of stores at your neighborhood mall. And they continue to steal, to loot, to pillage over and over and over again. And media in this country keeps focusing on Michael Jackson's goddamn doctor or Herman Cain. While this goes on and on and on and on and on, it never stops and it never will. So what do? We destroy this system. We end it. We take the perpetrators and put their asses in jail for decades, because to do otherwise is to say, go ahead, boys, just keep doing it. We don't care. Pretty soon you will have everything. You will have destroyed the American middle class. You will have destroyed the working poor, the workers. You'll have destroyed the upper middle class. You will have eaten the insides of this country down to the goddamn lining, the stomach lining. You have hollowed us out. How much more do you want? And you know what they'll do then? They'll say, well, excuse me, but how much more do you have? A spokesman for Citigroup said, as a result of the article in the Times, quote, there's no basis for any assertion that Citi has violated the terms of any settlement. Now, would you people please go away? Huh? We have here at Citigroup business to take care of today. Please get out of our offices. Thank you. And this is how it works. And this is how it's going to continue to work until, oh, dare I say it, until the present system is utterly, absolutely destroyed. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.